Strapped Web, we're back. What's up, Jordan?
Oh, hey, Brian. What's happening?
How you doing, man?
Good. We got some meat to cover today. Yes, we do. And I always talk for a few minutes before we start recording. Today was, you know, heavier. Well, what's your week like? Not good. What's your week like? Even worse.
All right.
Okay, let's record.
Okay, let's talk about it on the podcast. So here we go. Cool. I have 3 or 4 updates that are all related to the same thing. It's kind of like an ongoing thread, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I have 2 main things to talk about. One I would call a failure of leadership on my part, and the other one, very product related, a genuinely difficult product situation, but that's really what led into me not reacting well, and hence what I called the leadership failure. So same sort of thing, a common thread spread out in several different pieces.
These days, it's not very often that your issues and my issues like intersect so much at like on the same week or whatever. But like, I feel like this is one of those weeks because so my thing is related to product. It's related to the developer that I recently hired and some blow ups around that. So yeah, let's just get into it.
Okay, cool. You want to kick things off? Give us an update on how that's going?
Today, we're recording, Friday, October 11th? Today was my first full week back after going to Cabo Press, which was amazing, by the way. I guess we haven't recorded since before that. Chris Lemma put on just a fantastic trip. This was my second year back. This year as a speaker, brought my wife. It was just an awesome vacation in Cabo / conference and everything. So I had a great time there. But while I was there, my developer that I had hired was in his third week with me. So we had like 2 full weeks where I was home and we were working together day to day. And then the week where I was in Cabo, where I was checking in with him day to day, but not as often because I was in pools and getting drunk and on a beach a lot of that time.
People raved about Cabo Press. So that's pretty cool.
It's really fantastic. So the lingering concern that I had even before I left for Cabo was, okay, he's been with me like 2 full weeks. And that week before, I think I talked about it on the podcast, I was just not very thrilled with what he was able to finish in that he didn't finish the things that I wanted him to.
Yeah, and we talked about your potential role in that and in interruptions and like just trying to figure out, okay, adjustments now need to start being made.
Yep. And so the week I went to Cabo, I laid all the groundwork, you know, specs and some groundwork designs and everything for one feature for him to build while I was away. Just one. You know, he took it like 90% of the way there, and that was almost there, but it didn't quite get there, right? So there was that. And then the Monday that I got home from Cabo, there were the things that were still left over from that week before that were like 80 or 90% finished that he was supposed to also sort of like wrap up before the end of, so that by the Monday that I get home from Cabo, so this past Monday, we essentially have like 3 features that should have been ship ready. Like Monday morning, we do some final testing, then push to staging, then push to production. Going back about like, how do I plan the week to be super productive with him and everything? Ahead of time, I sent him like a Loom video and some written notes like, all right, on Monday morning, I know that you start several hours before I wake up. So you could just start on these final loose ends so that by the time I get in at 9 a.m., we're ready to just do that final testing and push. I get in 9:30 on Monday, like that stuff is not done. Like whatever, ran into this or that issue. I feel like it could have been worked around anyway. All of Monday goes by, little things coming up and those things are not done. Okay, so now we can't even push those things that are now 2 or 3 weeks late. Can't even push them live on Monday like I had hoped. Tuesday, we're coming around. I'm pretty frustrated at this point. So Tuesday, what I did was I was like, okay, again, like this is on me. I must be not planning or not managing this situation well, because if I was, then we would be more productive. So I think it's really just a communication breakdown. I don't believe that it's like he's, you know, going and doing other stuff or anything like that. Like I feel like he is there working, but I don't know, maybe he's just getting hung up on little details that I could probably help bust through much faster, right? And so I was like, okay, so it's a communication issue. We have to have a daily stand-up call And actually, I wanted to have two. So one in the morning at 9 when I get in, which is like his 3 p.m. So he's already been at work for half a day. And then let's have one at the end of the day, which would be his 8 p.m., which is late, but he works at night. So that I know that, like, all right, we start the day with a plan and we finish a day with, okay, this is what we finished. And okay, you're about to wind down. So here's what you can do tomorrow morning first thing.
Right. Less ambiguity around where things stand.
Yeah. So I was like, all right, let's just have these standing calls on the calendar for our 3 days a week. And that'll be that. And then I could tell he wasn't very thrilled about that idea. And then a few more hours in that same day, Tuesday went by, and, you know, this Zapier feature that we've been working on that he's been having a hard time with still not really work. And what really got me at that point was the Zapier feature was the thing that should have been done before I went to Cabo, like 2 weeks ago. He said that it was basically finished, just needed some final testing. And Zapier, by its nature,
the number of times that phrase is said is,
yeah,
it should be barred from all
now,
language.
Now Zapier is unique because in most features, any of us can just fire it up and test it, like locally, like pull the Git branch and everything. But with Zapier, you have to run, for the technical folks out there, like, you have to run ngrok, like tunneling. You've got to like set up the on Zapier.com, that app.
So
like,
it's not just hanging out on development server.
No, and it's not something that I could easily test while I'm traveling. So I was like, okay, I got the report from him that it's basically done. So Monday morning after my trip, I will just do that final testing. So I did that testing on Monday morning. Turns out like every aspect of it was not working. Like he said it was finished and it was not even tested to be working, or he misunderstood the specs or whatever. I don't know. We've gone back and forth so many times. I don't know how you could not understand the specs at this point. Anyway.
That right there is an interesting theme, the puzzlement over how is that not clear? Wasn't this obvious? That's really where things start to get difficult, because you're working with someone that it's not like they're not smart enough.
No,
that's
yeah,
not it. It becomes a puzzle on like, so what am I not doing? Am I not communicating clearly? How do we do this? Do we do multiple stand-ups per day? Do we do things visually? That's where it starts to really start to get into this. Well, how do we solve this puzzle?
So we're into that Tuesday of this week, and I start testing out the Zapier thing, and I'm telling him on chat, like, this is not working, this is not working. So I was like, let's get on a call, let's talk about this. I personally need to see what is the code that is not working. And I think he sensed my frustration on that call. And like within an hour after that, he said like, yeah, you know, maybe I just need to call it quits on this whole thing. He was like, I just don't think I'm the right candidate. I guess I was a little surprised that it came from him so soon, because I was sort of on the page like, okay, I was traveling last week. Let's give this another shot this week. Maybe I can become a better manager. Maybe we can have better communication and we can start getting in sync. I know it takes time. So my plan was like, let me give this at least like two more weeks. Cause I did head into this week, like if there's no improvement, we've got a problem. But I was going to give it like two more weeks before I pulled the plug. And I guess sort of luckily he was like, yeah, I don't think it's the right fit. And we had a, not contentious or anything, but we had like a good, very brief chat about like, okay, yeah, this is, I think we both feel like this is not the right fit for either of us. So as of Tuesday, midday, he was out. And since then, so this is the past 3 days now, I went in and I finished Zapier. I finished importing and exporting of kits, and I shipped two other small things. So like, I'm not saying this to brag. I'm just saying in 2 to 3 normal work days of work on my end, call it like 15 work hours, right? I was able to finish these things and push them live. These are things that I had tasked him to do in 3 weeks. And I understand that I know the code base and I know the product much better than him. He's still new at it. So if it took me 3 days, it should take him maybe a week, mm-hmm. maybe 10 days. Like,
right. But some combination of things was not resulting in what you needed to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not like I'm just like, here you go, go have fun. It's got to be done in a week. Like every single day, any question that he gives me, like I'm responding within 30 seconds. Like I'm here, please tell me where you're blocked. I want to remove your blockers, you know?
Right. Right. I do think that the situation that you're in, that first outside engineer, that is a pretty unique position for an engineer to be in. You are alone on an island. Everything you do is completely exposed to the elements. There's no team. There's no I'm good at this but not good at this. It is just – it's a giant spotlight right on you. You can understand how a lot of people don't like that position.
Again, I still look inward on this. Like, first of all, I actually think that that position for a freelance developer should be pretty attractive to many. Maybe not everyone, but it's attractive in that like you're going to be the guy or gal. And you get to collaborate at a very high level on this product and help make product decisions rather than being like a junior dev who just kind of picks up tickets as they get sent to him. You know what I mean? Like,
I think it's tough to tell. Sure, it sounds attractive, but then once the spotlight gets turned on, then you find out whether or not this is really the right situation for you. Code base, management, product, now all those things, there is no room I don't want to say to hide. I don't want to make it like a negative thing. It just gets exposed very, very quickly on whether or not it's the right situation for you.
Yeah, it's true. And a lot of that sort of those characteristics of a person, like you, it is so hard to identify that until you're working with them. You know, the failure on my part, I think, is I did what I've done so many times in the past, where I think I sort of like jumped the gun on hiring. The thought was, I have some cash reserves for, you know, profit saved up, ready to deploy. Maybe that could help me move faster on Process Kit and get us through some key features in the roadmap this fall. That's in theory, when you hire a developer, it's to move faster through your roadmap, right?
Right. Like you're ready for it. Like, okay, I'm ready to basically put the investment in, expand my universe of, okay, now I don't get to decide everything. Now I have a collaborator.
Yeah. And just having two people working on features, or having him working on features while I'm working on marketing, like the idea is two people are better than one. But I definitely found that even after a full month of him being on board, it was a lot slower than me working solo, at least in terms of the roadmap. See, this is the challenge that I still that I'm going to face again at some point, that I need to figure out at some point, is like, how do I hire that first developer that's not me? I've been able to do that with service businesses. I have not really been able to do that with software yet. Anyway, that's like another, that's a larger question that maybe we can jump
right.
to.
And ramp up expectations are weird. Like you don't think that it would take 3 or 4 months, but that's really how long it takes, depending on the situation. Sometimes it's more.
And I feel like I'm also looking for I don't know that I would even, it's not like a typical hiring a developer. It's not even like hiring a lead developer. I'm looking for a collaborator. I'm looking for somebody to work with me day to day. I don't want to say it's impossible to hire for that, but is it impossible to hire for that? Like,
well, as you're saying it, all I'm thinking is like Rock and Jan on our team, those first two, God bless you guys. It feels lucky to find collaborators at that stage that have that right mix of open to collaboration and just get things done right away. And then consistently, it is not an easy thing to find.
You and I have like harped on this for like every episode now, where it's like speed. We want speed. We want momentum. We want to be shipping features. And I'm like extremely impatient when it comes to finishing and shipping features, you know? And like, and I'm not saying cut corners. I have almost 100% test coverage on the code base on Process Kit. I personally have a sense of urgency. If I start a feature on Monday, I want that feature live by Friday. And I'm going to make it happen if I'm solo. Another developer doesn't really have that sense of urgency.
It depends on their prior experience. I mean, I'm hearing you say that, and that is a remnant from a previous life for me and for Carthook. And now when we identify a feature, if it gets pushed to production 90 days from now, it is we did a good job. It is very rare that we part the seas and say this thing must be out by the end of this month. It's very rare. And when I kind of take my turn and talk about it, that almost always involves a downside, a certain amount of pain. You want the speed? Cool. Guess what's going to happen? Something that you're not going to like because you wanted the speed.
Yeah. But I mean, you're in a much different phase, obviously, and it, you know, 90 days is normal in that phase. You know, like I'm in startup phase where it's like, I have customers saying, I can't sign up until you build this feature and that feature, or until Zapier can connect
right.
this
let's,
way.
Let's unblock. Like, let's go. Yeah,
let's go. Like
what I'm saying is, you might have an engineer coming from this environment, like we're in, where 3-4 months for a feature is normal.
I feel like most developers are that. You know?
Right. And then you put that spotlight on them in a completely different universe. You're like, get this done this week. And that is a new experience. So it's not to say that they're a bad engineer. It's to say it's not a good fit for your situation.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. Oh, right. Yes.
Well,
okay.
On your end, what's up?
I'll talk about the top level thing that I had problems with this week is, so here's the way I've been talking about it to a few people. I don't know what burnout looks like or feels like because I can't point to a time in the past, over the past few years, where I can point that I was burnt out right then and that's what it feels like and that's what it looks like. I don't have a memory of that. I've gone through difficult times where the emotional roller coaster was compounded by the financial stress or whatever those combinations are that put you in a difficult spot. But I don't know what like quote burnout is, or I can't identify it easily. And on Monday, the way I felt was like, maybe this is it. Because I've heard of people around me kind of give me the heads up, like, hey, buddy, you've been going pretty hard, just so you know, this might happen. And I'm like, yeah. That's not for me. But Monday I hit this strange mixture, this thing that felt like a wall and no motivation. It just felt very foreign and strange. And I was like, maybe this is what it is. So I ignored it. Right. And then I proceeded to have a terrible week.
What manifested? Like were you like physically ill or like what was it?
No, it was letting frustration get to me and having that impact the way I behaved. And so, you know, there are stressful moments. There have been many stressful moments, many frustrating, scary, all that stuff. But I almost always succeed in keeping it in perspective and keeping it in check because there are 25 people looking up at me. And if I'm freaking out, that's not a very comfortable feeling as a team member to be looking up at the guy who's supposed to be like stable and like leading and confident. So I let that get to me more than once this week. We had a really difficult technical situation. Part of it was brought about by wanting speed. So over the past few days, last week we announced a Square integration. Square is a payment processor like Stripe. They actually reached out to us because they thought it made sense to work together. The CBD market in e-commerce is exploding extremely fast. It's like the hottest area in e-commerce. And Square behind the scenes was running a beta for CBD merchants and was about to make an announcement that they're going to fully support CBD, not in beta, but like publicly. And so we wanted to collaborate on that. And that was a business opportunity and a strategic opportunity to say, let's move things out of the way and get this done right away. So that when Square announces, we can announce the next day. And so that is, you know, that's a big thing. It's a payment processing integration, which is a hairy thing for us. So we got it done within a month, which was a feat for everybody. The communications, blog post, press release, all that stuff on the marketing side, then product, support docs, UI, technical, backend, testing. It was like, it was an impressive accomplishment for us, something we would not have been able to do a year ago. But that high, that came with a cost. So we went faster and looser than we normally would. So we haven't had any issues around Square. That was great. But the stress and the workload and the pressure on engineers leaked out in other ways. And in many ways, it's totally understandable. Like if you put that much pressure and that much speed on a system like this that's very, very sensitive, the likelihood of absolutely nothing going wrong is actually low. Like something's going to happen. And so the thing that happened is just probably the most challenging part of our product, which is tracking. How our product reports events to Facebook, Google Analytics, Snapchat, and so on, right? That is how our customers run their business. They spend money on ads, and then they need to see the performance of those ads, and that's how they know what to do with their budget and what to do with our tool, what to do with the pages, what to do with the offers. So it's all based on performance, and that's all based on the tracking. Back in August, something I haven't spoken about because it's a sensitive area, is we made a personnel change for a very someone in a very senior role. After that, that kind of shook the company, and people were worried. They got confused because they didn't fully understand the reasons for it. That's kind of as much as I'll say about that. But it shook people. And so part of reestablishing confidence, I went to the other leadership. I went to the CTO and other people in leadership, and I said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to get a win. We're going to identify the area that customers complain about the most, and we are going to solve this once and for all. And we're going to get together, and we're going to prioritize it, and we're going to push the ball forward. So on the heels of this negative thing, we're going to get something very positive. And so I was in the office, 6:30 a.m. every day for a week. I kind of did the leadership thing. And we focused on tracking, and we released it, and we thought we had a fix. And then 2-3 weeks after that, which is this week, we started getting complaints, right? So you make a change, and then all of a sudden people start to see their Facebook advertising start to be impacted. And only then do you really understand whether or not what you did was right. What we did was accurate. It wasn't like a buggy problem, but we hadn't done it in quite the best way. And whatever it was, I was so emotionally invested in this thing being a win for everybody, that when it came back as not a win, even though it wasn't the engineer's fault, it's the nature of tracking is that it doesn't matter if you have the events accurate. It doesn't matter that you wrote good code. It's how the tool that then receives it handles it. And only then can you actually know what you're doing and what adjustments you need to make. So the nature of it is just this very strange thing. It's tough to have a grip on. And I let that frustration just get the better of me. And I was an angry mess. And I kind of lashed out. And it's not like I didn't like walk around the office yelling, but I was moping and negative and dark, and it negatively impacted other people. And I apologized and I said, okay, I'll do better. And then on Thursday, yesterday morning, it got the better of me again. And I was a negative jerk again. And then I apologized again. So I had to kind of take a step back, like, okay, what am I doing here? I'm not doing my job. So I addressed it publicly to everybody. And the interesting thing was, after addressing it, what I really said was, look, this thing is really hard that we're doing. I usually do a good job of kind of keeping that in check. And this week I failed more than once on it. And I'm sorry the way it impacted other people. And then after that stand-up, I got a few messages, like DMs, saying, thank you for showing that vulnerability. I feel that way too. It's good to know that it's okay to feel that way. So it's like, okay, it was good that I just addressed it instead of kind of kept it hidden or hoped that people would ignore it or whatever.
We let it out on this podcast here, but there's just this whole emotional layer above everything that happens in a company, whether you're a startup or you're established, you're growing, and there's this extra emotional layer that the founders or the partners or the key stakeholders in the business feel that I don't know. I feel like some employees might feel it to a certain level, but it's not the same.
It's a different version of it. It's also literally what you get paid for. You want more money, you want more upside, you need to absorb more of the, not of the stress, you just need to have more responsibility. And some of that responsibility comes with a different level of stress.
Yeah, but maybe it's also related to a longer term view and longer term goals. Like even a well-paid employee like the best outcome for them, if they're not like, let's say they don't own equity in the company, like the best outcome for them is doing good work on a day-to-day basis and making a good living and maybe leveling up some skill that might translate into something bigger down the road, but like not specific to your company. Whereas your long-term
personal growth, that it goes along with it.
But that's all here and now. That's like day-to-day what's happening, what's in my career right now. For you, we care about enjoying what we do today, but we're investing in this as an asset for our life for years, you know, like
and have been investing in it for years.
Yeah,
and that
our history goes back. You caring about the team like bouncing back after this negative thing, that's so that you can get this year on track, so that next year is good, so that 5 years you reach the goal that you have in mind. You know, like I don't think the team is thinking in those terms, you know.
Not in the same way. And the further in I go, there's also more to lose in many ways, because you look back at all the time and energy and everything invested, and to think that you know, that it doesn't result in what you want it to result in, not just money, but like a feeling of success and accomplishment and stability and family and all rewards and all that, is like, it's very scary. You know, if it doesn't work out for the people, it sucks, but they move on. But for you, you have a crater, a hole to fill of hopes and dreams that is different.
Not to bring it back on me here, but like I've been trying to think like, where did I go wrong in like misreading this whole situation with the developer, like trying to put myself in his shoes. I'm frustrated with the lack of speed and pace of not being able to ship the things that I had set out for us to ship each week. But like, yeah, he's sort of being paid for that specifically, but his goal is to have a good freelance retainer so that he can spend the other half of his week doing other stuff, and he's got a family and everything. And like I'm not trying to infringe on that stuff. The whole idea was that you can do this and you can do that. But like, I'm trying to get past a customer threshold to make this whole business even happen, you know? And he's like, a hired gun is not going to feel that, or even a long-term employee is not going to feel that, you know? It's, and I don't know how, I don't know, this gets into my other question, but like, how do you find that person that's going to have that sort of like stake in it, you know?
Maybe it's not right to expect it upfront or so early on. In many ways, it's like you're looking to get married and they're looking to date, and you want them to get to the point where marriage becomes an option. It's difficult to know what to do with that. Do you like pretend to take it slow? Do you tell them upfront, hey, I'd really like to get married and that's what I want this to end up at? I remember being very unsure of how to approach it when I first started working with Rocket Yan, where it was like, do I like reveal my soul here? Do I say, look, what I really want to do is get you guys this full time and let's do this for years and years and let's build something amazing together? Or do you take it slower than that? It's really like this dance. You have to be super honest, and at any point in time, something goes a little off, the relationship kind of ends, and
I think you nailed it.
That's tough.
I think you nailed it, and I think I definitely have this tendency to think too many steps ahead than where we're at today. And the idea a month ago was, hey, let me, like, I've got cash earmarked to pay a developer through the end of the year, ready to go. Let's do this. Let's move faster, and then maybe this person can turn into a long term employee and full time, maybe a lead dev someday, maybe a CTO. Like who knows? Yeah, but like.
You painted like, that picture.
That was the picture I had in my head, like how it would work out. and I had decided to go do that. Like I didn't, I took a couple of weeks, like should I or shouldn't I? But then I was like, okay, I should, let's do it. And then like a month in, it's like, oh, that's not going to happen at all. You know? And so it's like.
Does it make you question like the plan moving forward? Is it still the same exact plan? You're going to take a step back, cool off? it's strange. It's like you have an experience, and then that is inevitably going to have an impact on what you think you should do. Doesn't necessarily mean you were wrong a month ago.
But right. See, that's kind of okay. So the question is, when and how am I going to hire this type of developer again? As of today, my plan is like, I'm not going to hire right now, but I will need to figure this out at some point. So I guess option A is I can at some point hire somebody like very part-time, maybe even just a day or two a week, and not expect them to work even on Process Kit. Like maybe I'll give them some bug fixes on Process Kit to take over, but maybe I just have that person do a completely different project with me where I can let them sort of take the lead on the code base and build, and I'm collaborating with them. And over several months, we are building that rapport over time and getting some quick wins while I'm free to focus on Process Kit and keep pushing at the pace that I'm used to on Process Kit. Because what the challenge that I'm learning here is that it is really slow and hard to get somebody integrated into the Process Kit code base at this point, because there are already so many features that are intertwined, and it's just a lot slower to get those quick wins with a new developer, no matter how experienced they are. So if we can get those quick wins elsewhere while we're getting to know each other, and then over time, as the months go on, then they can slowly get integrated into Process Kit. And so that's one approach, is like just a few hours a week, do the dating thing for a long time, and not get too hung up on like, oh, Process Kit is not shipping fast enough, because that's still my job.
It's a more pressurized environment inside Process Kit. So to get someone in and ramp them up, because it will slow you down at first to get them ramped
right,
up.
Right, right, right. Yep. The other option would be to just not even do anything about it right now. Just stay completely solo.
Make progress.
Continue to make progress on Process Kit. I guess that's the same in both options here, but like, this is not sustainable forever. I'm definitely going to need to remove myself from the day-to-day product building at some point, assuming this product gets traction and continues on, right? So maybe there's going to be some point in the future when it's like, oh, Process Kit has reached a certain level of MRR. We've got a growth rate. It's looking good. I'm happy to invest a whole bunch of cash in hiring somebody full-time right now to come in and spend a month or two slowly integrating into Process Kit. But like, I'm going to hire somebody senior and just to sort of take over the reins at some point. And we know that when that happens, it's going to slow down feature development. But at that point, the product will have already, we've already finished all the big features. We already have customers. I mean, I'm skeptical of that plan, to be honest, because it's like...
That commitment?
Well, it's like when is a bootstrap startup really going to get to a point where it's like, oh, we've got all this time to burn and cash to burn and like that's probably never going to happen, you know? Like,
it's not that it never happens. It just takes so much longer than you kind of think or expect or want it to. There's something around the 10K in MRR that does make you feel more optimistic about like, okay, this was definitely the hardest part of it. And now if we go faster, we have enough of a base that I could see getting to 20K, and all of a sudden you are covering two pretty decent salaries at that level.
10K is sort of the number that I have in mind, because like, I don't need a salary from Process Kit, at least for the foreseeable future. So once we get there, then I feel like I could go look for the best person that can work full time and really have that level of a full time commitment to the product. You know, I don't see anything wrong with maybe going back to option A, where it's like, at least I have somebody starting and we have like the seeds of a relationship that's growing. And maybe it's just like a mentorship scenario where they're just like, where I go to them for my code questions, which I have every week anyway. Like, this person is not doing any real work, at least not for Process Kit, but we're working together in some capacity for a while, so that 4-6 months down the line, it's like, okay, we feel good about each other. Now let's take this to the next level, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. It sounds like you need to kind of work through what the right option for you is right now and how to do it.
Yeah. It's tricky because it's like, I've never really had such a hard time hiring before. Like in audience ops, I just processes and roles and fill them in and go, you know, it's like, it's definitely harder to when it's like, I definitely don't regret learning back end development and building the product myself, designing it. I really love this stuff. I think it's been huge as a long-term investment for me professionally. And in some ways it benefits me when it comes to hiring people, because I could literally read their code and understand what's going on and whether something was designed well or not. But it also makes it harder because it's like, because I know how fast or slow things are supposed to take now. And I could evaluate based on that too.
Yeah. Overall, I'd say it's good. Yep.
Yeah.
Cool. So the last thing on my end, you know, speaking of product, I have been more and more involved in product, and I'm enjoying it. And I'm also finding out these new things about the product function that I just didn't really know. One of the things that continues to surprise me is the patience that is required to detail out things that seem obvious. Any time in the past where I made that assumption, like, oh, this is so obvious that it doesn't really need to be said because it's so obvious, that is proven wrong repeatedly. And you know, part of my frustration this week was really rooted in some ignorance on my part on how this stuff works and how working with engineers works and feels. So some of the things that I was very frustrated with, when I then speak to someone on our team, Jessica, who's our product manager here, she helps me understand, look, this is kind of how it is. if you want clarity, you need to be clear. Or if you want things to come out with the same expectations as you have in your head, you need to be overly clear. And then don't be surprised that an engineer missed a detail. I have this very strange talent. I think it's rooted in my 1 year of investment banking, where as an analyst, you are working on these huge multi-$100 million deals, and all of it kind of rests on the documents that you as a 22-year-old are making. And so there's so much stress and fear around being accurate that I got drilled into me a attention to detail that is very high level. And so that's how I walk around with that expectation. And that is not the norm. And then it is definitely not the norm for engineers in some ways when it comes to like what's actually being shown on the front end and in the interactions on the front end. And so that expectation I have to kind of keep in check and not be like frustrated by like, no, that back and forth, like, oh, you missed like point number 4 of 5 points was specific. This needs to be included and you missed it is not like cause for a tailspin of frustration, anger. That's just part of the process. And so I'm learning that and I put out a tweet. I basically said something to the effect of the level of patience required in product is incredible. And I gave a quick little anecdote like, oh, you want what seems like a very simple change? Sure, I'll take 90 minutes on a Jira task to make sure you have every single detail of it. And the feedback I got from that on Twitter was super interesting. It was like, oh, there's something broken with your process. It's like, oh, I didn't expect that criticism, but it made me think, okay, you know, let's be introspective for a second here. Why do I feel the need to be that specific? Is that just me? Is it a shortcoming in the process? Is it like a trust issue? Like, what is that? Or is it just totally fine?
This is why I don't really love like debating these sorts of things on Twitter, like in theory, because it completely depends on each individual situation, right? But I will say in theory, in general, I tend to go sort of on the side of where you're coming from, like just more details, the better. Just overdo it. And I know that there can be a tendency to feel like, all right, I don't want to go into super detail because I don't want to imply that I think the person is dumb or that they can't figure it out themselves.
Yes.
I'm trying to be helpful. I'm trying to help them be successful in this. One little tactical thing that I do is specifically when I'm giving specs for a software feature to a developer, You know, I usually use GitHub issues. And so in the Markdown, you can not only have bullet lists, you can have checkbox lists. So I use a lot of those when it's like, okay, if this feature has like five main components that are like things that you need to work on and confirm that they work, those components are checkbox items. So that as they go through it, as they do it, when I come back and review and I see a checkbox on it, that means that you've built it and you've checked it. So like it's an action that they have to take. They have to go click that checkbox to say, yes, I saw that and I did that. You know, like
I think that would have saved me some grief this week because I had it as bullet points. And I overuse bullet points in my life overall.
Oh, me
every
too.
emails, everything. I love it.
Yeah.
But this was a bullet point in the Jira task among a lot of other words. And so I think a checkbox where it's just so much more glaringly obvious if something hasn't been checked off that it's like, you missed it. It hasn't been done. So anyway, it was an interesting lesson. It was all tied up in my frustration this week and my failure on keeping my shit together, all that. And it also really helped because we started looking internally in the process and saying, okay, what's going on here? What we identified is basically a new step in the Jira process, where product needs to sign off on things between develop and staging. So right, so we have like local environment, develop, then stage, then production. So we kind of identified where things should sit from a product approval point of view. And then it also highlighted the fact that we should have invested in hiring a full-time UI designer a long time ago. And so we're doing that now. You know, what's happening right now, it's words. What's coming from product into the engineering is words. It is not, here's a final design. It is, here's our design system. You know what buttons, corners, lines, words should look like based on our design system. I'm going to give you a bunch of words. You're going to combine what our design system already looks like and apply it to this specific feature or component. And it feels like we're begging for problems because what we should be handing over is here's the final design on what it should look like and how it should be interacted with. And me being frustrated that it doesn't come out looking perfect is kind of silly in that context.
At your stage, I think that sounds right. Like a UI designer on the team who, like, you know what it is? I think it would be so helpful because it's like, even if you already have the design system and the style guide already created, at least if you have somebody there to make a mock-up of what the finished thing should basically look like, it's just an extra visual. Like even if their mock-up won't actually end up being used in the production code, at least if they could see something, you know, somebody with that UI sense is in the process on every feature, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And Jessica and I on the product side.
And you could use that person in so many different ways. Like
yes.
Blog, it's not, blog graphics. Like you could use them on all these different things, you know?
Right. Overall design, but the key isn't really, it's UI. Yes. But it's UX first and then into UI, because right now when Jessica and I are debating features, everything's theoretical. Everything is, how do we conjure up the potential issues that someone will come across and how they actually use this feature? But we have to kind of visualize in our mind's eye, and we're definitely not visualizing the same thing because we're two different people. So we're going onto a whiteboard and we're writing it out, but it is just a gap that needs to be filled. So anyway, all of this stuff is to say, all that frustration as I am being educated on this stuff, it just feels even sillier to be frustrated and to be angry. It's like, okay, I'm wrong on that.
I'm a UI designer first. That's where I bring the most strength to the process, I think. And then once it comes to back end, that's where I'm a little bit of a hack. And like every new feature for me starts with the front end. And like even when I'm working with a developer, like I'll do the front end design and the code and I'll say like, all right, these are the parts that I need help with getting it wired up. I guess like somebody on the team who has that sort of, you know what it is too these days with front end development. Like I've ranted about it in the past, but like front end, the term front end has like veered more into like an engineering role where it shouldn't. I don't think that it should be. I think a front end should be more of a design role who happens to know how to code in HTML and CSS and might know a little bit about JavaScript. But I actually think that heavy JavaScript stuff is really more of an engineering role, you know, that can be sort of directed by a front-end designer. And if they can't do some complex JavaScript stuff, hand it over to an engineer. But a designer for the web should be able to write solid markup, have it look good and feel good in mobile and all the browsers and all that, and use CSS and like just be really strong with that, you know?
Yeah, I think where a lot of time is spent in our situation is the wiring up of the interactions between the back end and the front end. So it's the design is a piece of it, but it is in really close coordination with the back end and how it's going to, yeah. Like when we do a Square integration, cool. What happens when you hit the refund button? That needs to talk to Square in the right way with all these use cases and all these different fail safes and all these different, you know, edge things. Yeah. Cool, man. So, anybody knows a UI designer in Portland, text me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, somebody asked me the other day, how do you hire a designer who can also code pretty well? And I'm like, that's a tough one. I don't know.
That's
tough. Yeah. Cool. My only quick thing, again, related to everything I've already talked about, was now that I'm back to solo, I do once again have this problem of there's not enough hours in the week, and I'm completely booked on building these key features for these customers, but marketing is back to taking a back seat.
Yeah, trade-off.
And it's really frustrating right now because it's the marketing site for processkit.com. It's not live yet, and it's so close to being live. Like, I finished the design. I coded it like 80% of the way, and my plan was to come home from Cabo this week and get it finished, coded up, and launched. And it's
you don't get to focus on that.
I can't focus on that. And it's frustrating because things come up where like somebody tweets something and I want to reply to them and say, and I do reply and I say, oh, ProcessKit is a good answer to what you just asked. Check it out. Oh, by the way, we have a new marketing site coming out soon. Like,
Yes.
I know what you see there right now doesn't give you a whole lot of information or pictures or anything. We've got a new thing coming out soon, I promise. Check it out in 2 weeks. And it's like, I just want, you know, because I want the new marketing site gives you everything you need to know. And it has the positioning that I'm trying to position it with, whereas the current site does not. And it's like,
You need it then.
It's so close, and I'm going to spend a day or two next week to get it over the finish line. But I'm back to that point where it's like I'm behind on a bunch of different fronts, and I have to things have to trade off. You know.
Yeah. So a bit of that TikTok marketing, and then back to development. But definitely sounds like you need a tick in the marketing direction to get that thing out, and that'll keep pushing things forward.
Of course, the products are also the features are also marketing, because it's like, I literally before this episode I just shipped a massive Zapier update, so that's a marketable feature that I'm going to go to the list with and everything.
True,
so, you know,
cool man.
Yeah,
Bri, it was a good one.
Yes, it was. All right,
always a pleasure, my man.
It's a good therapy session on the air here.
Always. Have a great weekend. Thank you for listening, everybody.
All right, later.